Good morning, I should say. How about that? That easy for you? Good morning. There you go. Good morning. So glad that you guys are here today. Again, my name is Clay. If we've not met, I'm one of the pastors here. We're thrilled that you are here as we wrap up this series. But before we do that, if this is one of your first or second or third time in, you know, we don't want you to get out of here without knowing a couple of things about this place. And one is simply this, that you are surrounded by people just like you. They have the same stories that you have. They have the same questions that you have. And this is just normal, average, regular people that are here at Next Level. And because of that, your story is safe here. We just want you to understand, no matter what's been done to you or no matter what you've done, you can feel free to get into a group here. You can feel free to start serving with people. You can just be who you are and talk about what your story is, and your story is safe here. Nobody's going to look at you crazy and weird, I promise you, because, again, you're surrounded by people like you. And the third thing you need to know is this, that you do not have to believe what we believe in order to belong here. That no matter what you believe about God or about faith, about people, about church, you don't got to believe what we believe in order to belong here. Now, obviously, I would love for you to come to know and believe in Jesus the way that I do, but that does not exclude you from belonging here. We value you no matter where you're at in your journey. We're glad that you are here. Now, if you are here for the first time, you're at the very end of a series that we've been in since the beginning of the year. So this is week 7 of a series that we've called Epic. And you probably will want to go catch up online if this message stirs anything in your heart, because there's a lot that leads up to this message. And I know that in this time, it has been very meaningful. Many of us here, we've been inspired. We have been encouraged by God. Thank you to the many of you who have been emailing me the stories of what God is doing in your life and in your family and in your life groups. I love to hear good stories, because a lot of times as pastors, the only time you get emailed, it's bad. So if it's bad, it goes in the trash can. If it's good, it actually goes in the good file. So if you email me good stuff, it goes in the good file. And so we're thrilled that you guys are doing that, and you're experiencing life change. And so as we come rolling into this last week of this series, what do we do with the things that we've been challenged with? What do we do with the inspiration that we've been given, or the things that we've been encouraged to go about? Because the challenge for us as we think about this is, this series ends and we move on to another series next week, which will be fantastic. We're going to talk about life with God and what it means to be with God. But what do we do with what we've just learned? Because it's one thing to hear a message. We hear messages. We get inspired by messages all the time. They can be messages from churches. They can be messages about health or business. We get inspired all the time. It's one thing to hear. It is quite another thing to do something with it and to do something about it, to apply the message. I mean, I have that trouble as well. And so what I want to spend my time with today is basically talking about in challenging you and encouraging you to do something with the thing that you have heard. And the way that I want to do this is talking about story, talking about your life, and talking about the story of your life and what is going on in your life. Because here's what I know about you. You have a story. You have a story, and your story is probably different than my story, but it's a story. And there's hurt in that story, and there's good in that story, but your story matters. And what I want us to encourage us to think about is, what does our story look like tomorrow, next week, next month? In light of what God has been stirring inside of our hearts, what does our story look like moving forward? Because we are who we are by the choices and decisions that we have made that make up our story, aren't we? You know, the decisions that you've made have played into your story. It makes you into who you are. And sometimes that's good things, and you have lots of joyous things that have happened in your life. You probably don't know this about me, but when my wife and I first got married, I didn't want to have kids. And that's probably 95% of the men in this room. That's true. I did not want to have kids. I wanted to be selfish, and I wanted all the money and all the toys for me. But my wife, you know, worked on this cold Grinch heart, and we made a choice and a decision to have kids. And now we have 3 kids. I wouldn't change that for anything. That decision is now a part of my story. It's part of my life. And you have other good things that have happened like that. We also have bad things, things that we would regret, things that we wish we could go back and change in our story. But even in those things, it still makes up who you are. Your greatest regrets, your greatest joys, they make up who you are. They make up your story. And our choices and our decisions that make up who we are, they not only affect us, they affect people around us, right? You don't have to look very far, but just think about your parents. What if they had not made that decision to move when they made that decision to move? What if they would not have moved at all? How would your story be different? What if your parents would have made that decision to stay together instead of getting divorced? Would that have changed your story? Would that have made things different? What if mom or dad would not have taken that job that they took? Would that change your story? See, our decisions, our choices, they affect more than us. Our personal choices and private decisions impact not only us, but people that are around us. And so as I talk about what I talk about today, I need you to understand that the decisions that you make and the choices that you make in light of what you have learned, in light of what you were inspired as we went through the series, they matter and they will affect your life and they will affect the people that are around you. So the question that we're going to wrestle with as we go through today is this: what is the story that you want to tell? See, we all have a story, but what's the story that you want to tell? When you're sitting 6 months from now, 6 years from now, 60 years from now, what's the story that you want to be able to tell? Is the story, well, you know, I just kind of ignored my past and I pressed down my pain and I thought I would just get through it and I pressed on and things just got worse and worse and worse and worse and nothing really ever worked out in my life? That's a story you can tell. And that's a story many people tell. Or is the story that you want to tell, yes, I was, you know, everything went against me, all things conspired against me, and life was tough, but you know what, I found this way to connect with God, and the greater story that was going on and being told, I found a way to go on an adventure, I found a way to be wooed by God and pursued and to get into and being involved in His story, and it turned my life around, and it turned my story around. Yes, I still had those painful things, but God went with me through them, and I'm here to tell you that He'll go through you. That's a story you can tell. So when we leave this place, we all have a story that we are eventually going to tell. And here's the great thing about it. Whatever your story was yesterday does not have to define what your story is tomorrow. Whatever has led up to this point in your life does not have to define the rest of your story. And for many of us, that is really good news. But we're not the first people or the first generation to have to deal and wrestle with this whole idea of when life throws you bad things, you know, what decisions you make, what choices do you make. There's a great illustration of this in the Bible, and here's where we're going to go. So if you got a Bible, we're going to go to Genesis. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 37. You can also watch on the screens, or you can pull up the Bible app, however you choose to follow along with us. But let me set some context for this. We're going to talk about the story of Joseph. Now, not Joseph and Mary Joseph. You probably heard of him. This is Joseph, the Technicolor Dreamcoat Joseph, right? Some of you know the musical more than you know the Bible story. That's okay. The musical is based on the Bible story. Changed a few things in there. But this is that Joseph. And this story is set in B.C. 1859. So to kind of reference you how long ago that was, there's just as much time between Jesus and Joseph as there is between us and Jesus, roughly. Long time ago, this story took place. And so there's a young man named Joseph. He is one of the youngest in the family. He's got 11 brothers, but he is the most favored son of his father. He has gone out, and the dad has actually said, "I like all of you, but that's my favorite," right? And to what I say to Jacob is, at least he was honest, because every parent here, you have a favorite kid. You just don't tell them. Wise not to. Wise not to. But he went in and he said, "No, you're my favorite. This is the favorite." And he went, the next step is he gave him a coat of many colors, as it's called, or a technicolor dream coat, however you want to look at it. He says, "Look, every time you see this coat, you're going to see my favorite son. All my other sons, they get the crappy coats. He gets the really good coat," right? And so he is the favorite, which starts building a little bit of tension inside the family. And then God gives Joseph a dream. And in his dream, he is above and in charge of the whole family, dad, brothers, everyone. I'm in charge of all of that. Now, it's cool that God gave him a dream, and it's fantastic I gave him a dream. I think Joseph made the mistake by then saying, "I'm going to go tell my brothers my dream. Hey, guys, guess what? I know I'm the littlest. I'm going to be in charge of you." It didn't go well, right? And so there's all of this hatred for Joseph. There's all of this, you know what, jealousy, basically. that happens inside of this story. And it brings us to this point in Genesis chapter 37, where the dad, Jacob, has sent Joseph off and said, hey, your brothers are out tending some sheep. I need you to go check on them. I need you to look after them. I need you to come back and tattle on your brothers, basically. And that went over really well with the brothers. Like, oh, he's sending Joseph to check on us. And so this takes place as Joseph is sent out. Verse 18. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. Why do you think they recognized him in the distance? The coat of many colors. Like, there's that daggum Technicolor dream coat. Honestly. So they recognize him. And as he approached, they made plans to kill him. Now, I know you've had sibling rivalry in your family. I know that you didn't like your brother or your sister. I don't think anybody here plotted to kill them. But this is what they're after. And they're serious. This isn't, you know, hey, I'm going to kill you. No, this is serious. So they make plans to kill him. Verse 19, here comes the dreamer, right? So they're starting to get sarcastic here. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Wow. So they see Joseph coming across a field. And in that moment, they make a decision. And the decision is, we're going to kill him. Can you imagine the level of jealousy and rage and things that have happened in their heart that they have gotten to the point that they are actually going to kill their little brother? But as Joseph gets closer, they back off of that a little bit. If you know the story, they back off. And the older brother, Reuben, finally says, hey, let's not kill him. That probably won't go well. There's some slave traders that come by here, so what we'll do is we will sell him. At least we'll make a little money off of him. And so they do. They take him, they throw him in this pit, they take the coat from him, and they come up with a plan where they shred his coat, they cover it in blood, and then they go back to their dad and they say, Dad, we came across Joseph. He was eaten by a wild animal, and here's his bloody coat to go with it. That's the story, and this is what happens. Joseph is sold into slavery, and at that point and in that moment, the brothers now have a secret that they must keep for the rest of their lives. This decision, this choice, makes them liars for life. We now got to lie to our whole family for the rest of our life. We got to lie to our wives. We got to lie to our children. We got to lie to our father because no one can know of this. We are now liars for life. And I think if we could go back to a moment in time before this happened and have a conversation with them, and we could say something like, hey guys, I know what you guys are deciding right here, but is this the story that you want to tell? You know, the story that you have to live with and you tell about yourself that, hey, when I was in my 20s, I had a little brother, and I was so jealous of this little brother because he was dad's favorite and dad did everything for him, and I just hated him. But the reality is, maybe I just didn't hate him. I was just so jealous, but I didn't want to talk about jealous, so I put all my hatred on him. But I hated him so bad that I decided to kill him. But then my older brother, he kind of came in and said, well, let's just sell him into slavery. So when I was in my 20s, I sold my little brother to slave traders. And then I went back to dad, and I took the ripped up coat that we all sat there and we ripped and we rehearsed the story and we put blood all over it. And we went back to dad and we said, hey, dad, we came across this body and it was in the desert and it was Joseph, dad, and wild animals ate him. He's dead. And I watched my dad's heart break and I watched him cry. And I've lived with that life, that lie the rest of my life. Is that the story that you want to tell? I think we could all wish that someone could go back to some moment and some point and some time and could talk to us in that way, don't we? Come back and say, hey, Is this the story that you really want to be able to tell all that are around you? You know, that thing that you're most shamed about? What if someone could come in that moment right before you did it and say, hey, you don't want to do this. It's not a story you want to tell. You know, right before that party in high school or that party in college where you did some things that you said you would never, ever do, and it kind of put you onto a path that you never thought you would be on. What if someone were to walk in and said, look, is that the story you want to tell? Or maybe someone shows up, you know, and right before that moment, you know, and there was that work relationship and things went from kind of casual talking to flirting. What if someone would have showed up in that moment right before, you know, you crossed the line? And you crossed the line, and when you crossed that line, you went against your family, you went against your wife, and you went against everything that was in you that said, no, I don't want to do that. What if someone would have walked into your life and said, hey, is that the story you want to tell? Or that moment when you were so angry and you were so mad and your children had done something that just drove you crazy. And in that moment, without thinking about it and without restraint, you just said some very hurtful things, some very mean things, some things that you never even meant, but you just ripped your children apart and you just called them all kinds of things that have damaged them. Is that the story you want to tell? And so we all have these moments. But here's the thing. We are writing our story moment by moment. Every moment, every decision, we're writing our story. How we treat our families, we're writing our story. How we treat our children, we're writing our story. How we treat our coworkers, our friends, the people that are around us, we are writing our stories. You know, and over time, one of the things that God has done with me is drill back into my story, into some painful places, into some of the biggest regrets that I've had in my life, some of the most hurtful moments that I've had in my life. But it has given me some insight into a couple of things that are really key in my life about why I do some of the things that I do, because I've allowed God to take me back there. When God says, look, Clay, you want to know why you have this trigger? Let's show you why you have this trigger. Clay, you ever wondered why you have this button, and when your wife pushes that button, you just go crazy? Let me tell you why that is. And I've gone to some painful places. I've had some dreams that took me back to the moment when they were just as real as when they happened. I've had some prayer times when God brings up something in that moment, one of the most painful, most embarrassing moments in my life. And he says, look, I want to tell you. And he begins to walk through what happened. And he's like a father to me and brings some healing. And then he'll step back and he'll say, that's why you're having a trigger. You don't need to do that anymore. You see, the story I could tell is, no, I got hot button issues. I got things and I've never dealt with them. And this is why I'm so angry at my wife. This is why I fly off at my wife. This is why I get so defensive. That's a story I could tell. The story I could tell is also, yes, I do those things, but I do them less and less and less because I've allowed God to take me to those places and bring some healing into my life. And he can do the same thing for you. It's a story you tell. It's all on our decisions. Anyway, story of Joseph continues. His brothers throw him into the pit. He is sold into slavery. He winds up in Egypt, and he is bought by a man named Potiphar. Potiphar is one of the generals, one of the commanders in Pharaoh's army. He holds a high-ranking position, probably is full of wealth. And Joseph comes in, and he is now a house slave for Potiphar, and he has a choice. He can do what most slaves do. He can spend his whole time trying to figure out how he can escape, how he can inflict harm on his master without actually, you know, being caught. He can figure out ways to just do the least of whatever it is that is asked of him. He can moan and shake his fist at God and say, why you've done this to me? There's lots of things that Joseph could have done. But he chose to do the right thing and the good thing and the consistent thing. And over as we read his story, he just continued to do the thing that God would ask of him, the honorable thing and the right thing. And before long, Potiphar notices Joseph. And he begins to give Joseph more and more responsibility. So if you flip over to chapter 39, verse 6, Joseph's story continues with this. It says, so Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. I love that. How many of you would like to have that life? Ah, that sounds like a good life right there. One of the points that I get out of this early point in Joseph's story, I put it in your notes this way, is that our small daily choices can make a big difference in how our story reads. That our small daily choices can make a very big difference in how our story reads. Right? Again, Joseph, every day could be conspiring against his boss. He could be conspiring against the one who owns him. He could have been making those daily choices, and his story would have read completely different. And we would have certainly never heard of Joseph. But he chose to do the right thing, and he did it over and over and over consistently over time, and that changed his story. That changed who he was. The choices of what I do with my everyday life, they do alter how my story reads. If I choose on a daily basis to connect with my Heavenly Father and I'm going to pray, even though I don't understand prayer, I'm going to investigate prayer and I'm going to make a commitment that every day I'm going to pray. I will tell you this, if you make that commitment today, tomorrow you'll be no different. Next week, you're probably not any different. 6 weeks from now, you're different. 6 months from now, you are different. A year from now, you are radically different. And your story has changed. You see, these small choices that we make, when we do them consistently over time, it changes how our story reads. If you make a commitment to begin to give to God and say, God, I'm going to put you first, and I'm going to put you with in charge of my financial future. The first time that it happens, it's going to be scary and all kinds of things, you know, and it's probably not going to change you. But when you make that commitment consistently over time, you begin to see God show up, and God does things that you can't even explain. And somehow, living on less, you're doing better. I can't explain it. I've seen it over and over. But I know when I make that decision consistently over time, it changes and it alters my story. When we make a decision that we're going to become a servant rather than a consumer, that's going to be my story, that I'm going to investigate ways to serve everybody that's around me. I'm going to become a servant to my wife, to my kids. I'm going to look into a local church like this, and I'm going to say, how can I serve? I see that you got a kids ministry, that you're passionate about the next generation. I want to help you raise up the next generation of leaders. I want to get in and pour in there. It doesn't change. Next week, if you were to walk over there, we'd love to tell you that your life is awesome after 1 week of, you know, working with our kids. It's not. 6 months it is. 12 months later, you're changed. There's something that just changes in you. Drilling into your own story and allowing God to go there and to heal all of the hurts and to point out all the things. If you allow it to happen and you make the choice to say, God, I'm open to this, consistently over time, it changes how your story reads. Jesus tells us in Luke 16, if you're faithful in the little things, you'll be faithful in the greater things. Jesus is saying, look, you got to learn to be faithful. You got to start out small. And if you'll start out small, you'll do some great things. But you got to be faithful in doing the things. Now, in Joseph's story, this is great. He's in charge of Potiphar's house, and it's all good. And then it's almost like the soundtrack to the story changes. It goes from like happy, bright music to dark, ominous music. In this same verse. And you can see the change as it begins to happen. Verse 6. It says, Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man. And right there, the music changes. Joseph is about to be faced with a choice that there is no win in this choice. If he chooses A, it's a problem. If he chooses B, it's a problem. There is no win in the choices that are facing Joseph. So he's a handsome and well-built young man, and Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Come and sleep with me, she demanded. And this is fascinating to me because here's Joseph at this point. He's a 19, 20-year-old young man in his, let's be honest, in his sexual prime and being pursued by this woman. He's far away from his God, who probably, in his mind, where is this God who allowed me to be beaten and sold into slavery? Where is this God? He's far away from his family. At this point, there is no Bible for him. He has no written Bible to go back on. All he has are some stories from what people talked about the God of his great-grandfather Abraham and how all this worked out. And so here's this young man, this young guy entering, coming out of his teenage years into his young adulthood. And he begins to rehearse his story out loud. I think this is really key for us. He begins to rehearse the implications of his story, rehearse the context of the story and all that is going on, and he rehearses it out loud. And the second point that I have for you is sometimes we just need to remind ourselves of the broader context of our story. Sometimes we've got to remind ourselves. And so Joseph, he just reviews the broader context, and he does it out loud with the Potiphar's wife sitting right there. She's trying to get him to sleep with her, and I don't know, maybe it's easy for him because she's really ugly. I don't know. But in my head, she's not, so it's kind of hard. And he rehearses with her out loud. Hey, let me walk through my story here. That I was sold, yes, I was sold into slavery. I was put on an auction block, but I was bought by your husband. And I've done nothing but do the right thing the whole time that I've been here. I've made all the right choices. I've looked out for everything that is going on in his life. I came into this family as a slave with no rights, and I have been elevated to the highest position in this house to the point that Potiphar, your husband, doesn't worry about anything. I have never wronged him. I have worked hard at everything I've done, and with God's help, I have gotten to the place that I have gotten to where I'm in charge of his entire household. And then he says, and I quote from verse 8, "My master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you. By the way, because you are his wife." Just to remind you. In other words, Potiphar's wife, do you want your story to be that you betrayed your husband with a Hebrew slave? Because that's not what I want for my story. That is not where I want to be. I don't want my story to be, I came into the house as a slave, I worked up, and I worked hard, and the moment that I could make a decision to not betray the one who had done things for me, I turned my back on him, and I betrayed him in the worst possible way, and I slept with his wife. I don't want that to be my story. Author of Genesis continues in verse 10. So he turns her down, but apparently she kept putting pressure on Joseph day after day. She didn't want to take no for an answer. I'm like, no, no. But he refused to sleep with her. And then he did something really smart. He kept out of her way as much as possible. So she keeps coming after him. And he keeps rebuffing her, telling her no. Can you imagine how humiliating this is to her? And eventually her humiliation turns into anger, which turns into rage, which turns into revenge. And so one day when Joseph's around, she grabs him by the coat. He takes off running. He leaves his coat behind, and she claims that he was there and he tried to rape her. She calls for her husband. Potiphar comes in. Potiphar sees and hears the explanation of what is going on, and now he's faced with the decision of what he's got to do something. And so he puts Joseph in prison. Most scholars believe that what he would have done to any other slaves, he would have executed them on the spot. But the fact that he put him in prison was because he probably didn't believe his wife's story to begin with, possibly because she had been doing this before. So he puts him in prison. And then there's an interesting verse in verse 21. It says, "But the Lord was with Joseph in prison and showed him his faithful love." And when I read this, I'm thinking, the Lord was with Joseph in prison. I don't want to be in prison. I don't want God with me in prison. At all, ever. There's an interesting verse later. It says, "And the Lord was with Joseph and gave him favor in the eyes of the warden." Like, I don't even want to know a prison warden. How many of you? What do you mean the Lord is with Joseph? Because if the Lord is with Joseph, then bad things don't happen, right? That's the way it's supposed to work. If the Lord is with you, then only good things happen. Not necessarily. You see, what I've learned in my prayer life, many times I pray just like you. I pray to get out of things. You pray those prayers? God, get me out of this. God, get me out of this. But what I have figured out that most of my prayers are answered, not by God getting me out of, but by God going through it with me. I'd say that's 99% of my prayers. Like, hey, Clay, I'm not going to get you out of this, but I will go through it with you. And I will bring something good out of this. The Lord was with Joseph in prison. Here's something to think about. Regardless of what's going on in your life, and regardless of what's going on, what is ever bad that has happened, and you think it couldn't get any worse, here's the thing. Your story is not over. Your story is never over. You could think that it's over. You could think, wow, this is terrible. Your story is never over. In fact, we write our stories one decision and one choice at a time, and you still have another decision, and you still have another choice. And granted, they may not be good decisions, and they may not be good choices like Joseph's, but you can still make a decision, and you can still make a choice. Your story is not over. So what's the story I want to tell? Is it that, hey, I got to this place in my life, and life wasn't working out, and I just gave up. I gave up on God, and I gave up on everything. That's the story you could tell. Or is it that, hey, everything was going wrong in my life. I was saved. I was a Christian. I just didn't feel God. And I just surrendered myself to Him. And something happened inside this series, and I was making a commitment to say, God, I'm going to seek You out, and I'm going to go at You with all my heart. And I spent time with God, and my life changed. That's a story you could tell. See, Joseph's story was radically changed. And you contrast his story with his brother's story. The brother's story is, yeah, I was jealous of my brother. I hated him. We decided to kill him. But at the last minute, instead of killing him, we sold him into slavery. Then we went home and we lied to Dad that he had been eaten by an animal. And I've kept that lie my whole life. That's their story. Joseph's story is, yeah, my brothers, they wronged me. They sold me into slavery. I became a slave. I worked my way up. And then I had a decision. I was wrongly accused of rape. I was thrown into prison. But eventually, I was elevated, if you know Joseph's story, to the prime minister of Egypt. I was second in command to all of Egypt. And I had an opportunity to take revenge on my brothers, and I didn't. I forgave them, and I brought them to live here so that they could live a better life. That's the story. We all have a choice to make. We can all make a decision. What story is it that you want to tell moving forward? So as we begin to think about this series, you can be inspired. You can be inspired by my words. You can be inspired by the Holy Spirit. There's lots of things you say, yeah, I want to do that. But sometimes it takes more than words. It takes action. There's a great clip inside the movie Patriot. If you've not seen the movie, it's the story in the beginning of the Revolutionary War. And Gabriel Martin, the young son that's in this, has joined the South Carolina militia. And he is going to recruit people to join the militia. And he's riding through towns where they are speaking of freedom. I want freedom. We should have freedom. They're speaking all the words. And so he comes riding into a church service to say, how many of you are with me? How many of you want to take action on your words? And nobody moves until this fantastic speech by the young lady that then becomes his wife. And she asks a question that is very, very powerful. Let's watch this together. She asks, will you now, when you're needed most, will you stop at words? I would ask us the same question. In light of all that we have learned, in light of all that has been awakened inside of us, will you now, when your family needs you most, when your wife, when your husband, when your kids, when they need you most, when your friends need you most, when your coworkers need you most, to enter into this battle, to take on the enemy of this world, to bring freedom to all that are around you, when you are needed most, will you stop at only words? She delivered probably the best altar call I've ever heard in my life. See, that's the decision that we have. That's what's in front of us, really. What story do you want to tell? There's another great scene from Braveheart, and I wouldn't have time to play it here, so I didn't, where they're on the battlefield, and all the guys are running from the battle. They're leaving the battlefield, and he comes riding in, and he makes this statement. He says, guys, would you, on your deathbed, give everything that you have to come back to this moment? And fight. So I believe you would. The best moment I've ever made in my life, the best decision I've ever made in my life, was to enter in to all that I've talked about in the last 6 weeks. To let God move me from a place of just being forgiven to being forgiven and free. To allowing God to go deep into my life. to me developing relationships around where I can be honest about who I am and what's going on, and for them to call me out, for them to spur me on to growth into God. None of that happens passively. And I'm going to be honest with you, none of that happens in this room. Ever. It all happens outside of this space. And that's hard to take as a pastor. That you will grow most spiritually outside of this space. But it's a decision that you make in spaces like this to go and do that. You can walk out of here, and they can be great words and they can be great inspiration. Or you can say, no, I'm going to do something about it. I'm actually going to learn to pray. I'm actually going to serve. I'm going to give. I'm going to, whatever it is that God is just churning inside of you. But let me give you a real practical step. Walk out of the space, and if you're not in any kind of small group environment of any kind, get in one. You can walk to the welcome table. We've got 4 or 5 new groups that are starting with brand new people. So if you're brand new, they'll start with you. All new. Get in a group. Your story is safe in that group. You can share. You can grow. I can give you a practical step. Start there. But will you, when you are needed most, stop it on the words? I hope not. Let's all pray. Jesus, so what's inside of us? What's inside of us is you calling us to make a difference, calling us to dive into the hurtful things, the darker things that are in our life to be healed. Calling us to rise up to an occasion, to rise up to do the things that we know that we should do. God, I pray that you would give us the courage. God, give us the strength and the courage to take that step, to move from words to action, to find what freedom is really like, not just religion, not just church. God, I pray that every person here would enter into the battle knowing their role to play, and head headlong into it. Holy Spirit, be with us. Convict us if you have to move us from words to action. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.